boy, what's in your perception? You know where I got this topic from, don't you? You just have to know. Well, do you remember the ending question from the TV advertisement for Capital One credit cards? What's in your wallet? Do you remember that? Well, this humorous way of getting us to think about our financial credit card security and what we want to do about it, which is, of course, get a Capital One credit card, and yes, they are paying me for this announcement, is an analogy. And it's one I'd like to borrow in order to ask us the question, not what's in your wallet, but what's in your perception. Isn't this just too tricky? I know you're just bowled over with a sense of wonder and awe at how tricky it can get, but you just stick around. Another way of asking what's in your perception is, what's your daily view of life? Or what do you find yourself noticing on a daily basis? What's in your perceptual field? Amid the millions of available possibilities that present themselves to you in a 24-hour period. Or I could really go to a little more vernacular level and borrow another TV ad, which is, what's up? Oh, I know, you're just laughing all the way to the bank. So let's look at it this way. You and I get up every morning, well, most of us do, to face what? Well, actually, to face a whole new day. And it could be a day filled with innumerable possibilities for living, feeling, thinking, and or experiencing. It could be a day just awash in countless opportunities. Not just opportunities for external creations and successes, but for internal experience and richness. Or it could be a day that might be just like yesterday, or might be completely different, depending on how we approach it and what we decide to notice. So notice the topic, what's in your perception? What do you find yourself noticing? What are you perceiving as you go through the day? So it's all about how we're primed to enter into this day. What we've decided, consciously, subconsciously, spiritually, to relate to throughout this day. Or how we've opened ourselves to be a part of this particular day's unfolding dynamics. For example, some people, and you probably know some of them, actually get out of bed excited about each day. I happen to live with one of those, by the way, and seem to have a sense of like engagement with every person or every event that they encounter. While others, you may know some of them too, seem to ease out of bed, preoccupied throughout their day with, oh, maybe self-survival, barely noticing what's going on around them. I remember once, several years back, when Donna and I lived in Arizona, where we were totally fascinated with the miracle and the majesty of, you guessed it, the desert. Not just its magnificence, but its palpable life, its wondrous flora, its hidden but very noticeable fauna. The desert's utter beauty, and best of all, perhaps, the many blessings that are just waiting in the desert to shower themselves on anyone who comes to avail themselves of those blessings. Well, here's what we noticed. We noticed that many of the people who came to visit us from other parts of the country and really came in many ways for the ostensible purpose of being renewed by the desert's beauty and blessing. In fact, that's what they told us when they called and asked to come, is that they really wanted just to hang out in the desert and just be renewed. We found that they barely saw, not all of them, many of them, barely saw and experienced that desert. Often as we took them into the desert's wonders, all they wanted to do was talk about their lives back home. Or they were mentally and verbally preoccupied with the very personal issues and pains that they came to have healed by the desert's very loving embrace. In other words, they seemingly, and I know it wasn't totally true, missed the desert's gifts just because they were somewhere else. I think my point here is fairly obvious. We often miss what's right in front of our noses, in front of our eyes, simply because we've not oriented ourselves to see, or to use another verb, to notice its obvious presence. So, I'd like to ask us, you and me, this question. How many blessings do you think are right under your nose every day, or every hour, or every minute, without your, or my, or us noticing what they are? What might you not be seeing in your life, in every day, simply because you're thinking about something else, or feeling owned by another preoccupation, or just plain old not primed to notice? Well, I'm going to go somewhere with this. These questions go back, I think, to an underlying and maybe even more basic question. You ready for the question? It's the old standby. What's the meaning and purpose of life here on Earth? And I'd like to take it from a few angles and then tell you why I'm asking the question. So what's the meaning and purpose of life on Earth? Well, of course, if we'd ask a two-year-old that question, he or she would probably answer us with a confident, well, to play, of course, or to pretend, or to have fun. Now, if we ask a teenager, we might be confronted with another answer, like, well, to be accepted by my peers, or to have good friends, or to find my independence, among others. And if we asked a successful executive or entrepreneur, she or he might tell us that life's purpose is to be successful, or to provide for those I love, or to take good care of my employees or my stockholders. And finally, if we ask a senior citizen, that person might answer that most important thing in life is to be at peace, or to enjoy the little things of life, or just to love those around me. In other words, and here's where I'm going, what we notice usually corresponds to our sense of what's important. So back to the question, how would you answer that question right now? What's the meaning and purpose of your life? And as you let that inner response just in piecemeal or bit by bit come forth, then looking at how you slide out of bed in the morning, assuming that you have a slide by the side of your bed, by the way, or at how you ease into your day's activities, or looking at what you've noticed as you're, or what you're noticing as you're in the midst of that day's events, does the answer that's circulating in your mind right now about that question coincide with your daily experience? That is, are you noticing or connecting with or experiencing what you truly believe is the primary purpose of that special day? Could be, maybe not. Now, you ready? I'm going to the next important question. I'm just filled with questions today. The next important question, what's out there? What's out there waiting to be noticed by you? Well, first of all, I think there are a gazillion things out there. Millions upon millions of possible objects and circumstances and events and persons for you and me to perceive. Or, if you prefer, millions of things that your own perception creates, whichever way you want to look at it. Anyway, the possibilities of what's out there are utterly endless. So I'd like to enumerate just a few of those millions of possibilities over the next few minutes, with your permission, of course. And since I've got you on mute here, there's no way you can just yell and scream and say, no, I don't give you my permission. Or you could do that, it's just that I wouldn't hear you. So actually, I've got 7 brief examples. You see, I've really prepared this. Examples of what's out there. First of all, when I look outside of myself, this is me, Bill, speaking, I often see a world filled with infinite possibilities. So I see possibilities. I look into the light field around me and I notice several possible creations just waiting to happen or manifest. And I know that whatever I focus on comes immediately into life. Life as either an energy or energetic form, or sometimes as an actual event in my world of experience. So in other words, I get to observe creation in the making. And it's really quite a wondrous thing, creation. Another example for Donna, whom I love to tell stories on, almost every day when she wakes up, she sets herself up to participate in what I've come to call, quote, the ceremony of the sun, unquote. She's actually got an intimate relationship with the sun, and every morning welcomes it and its blessing-filled light as it rises to greet us. What a great way to start each day. Well, third example, for some other people I know, they actually look for things, specific things, every day to be grateful for. They bring what they probably call their attitude of gratitude out into their world of experience, and they literally look, sometimes search, for something to be grateful for. They notice the things that go on around them, and as we know from watching the Oprah show, such an approach can make a huge, huge difference in the lives of anyone who takes that approach. Another example, whenever I encounter what I'd like to call a difficulty or a difficult situation, Donna and I together and individually usually ask ourselves a question something like, what's the blessing in this situation? Or how is life trying to express or express itself in and through this seemingly strange event? Other times, in similar situations, we simply invite ourselves to know that something pretty powerful is in the process of being created. And then we invite ourselves to be, as fully as possible, conscious participants in that creation. Now, you know, that example really kind of hurts because, as many of you know, I love being a victim. And the only problem with this approach is that it tends to take the sting out of victimhood. And while I personally, Bill, you know, work really hard at staying feeling like a victim, this approach, this asking, what's the blessing of the situation, actually moves my perception into the mode of seeing myself not so much as a victim, I hate to say, but as a creative participant in life's unfolding creation. Here's another example. This morning, as I was driving to town for a meeting, I found myself looking at the red rocks, the desert sand, the almost invisible life contained in that sand, and then the beauty of the desert's plants. I found myself actually pretty mesmerized by their beauty, spontaneously even talking to them. Yes, I'm sorry I talked to plants. No, don't take me away. And I found myself thanking them for blessing me in that moment, and then wishing them a wonderful day. And in return, I actually felt their love. Another example, then, as I arrived at the office for my meeting, I found myself thanking the receptionist for her smile, and then in some small way bonding a little bit verbally with the man in the waiting room who was quite disturbed that there were no Popular Mechanics magazines available there. And finally, bidding a wonderful day to the woman who appeared to show me to the inner office. And last example, I have a friend. Yes, only one. It's, you know, nobody else likes me. But I have a friend who specializes in looking for the challenging tasks in life. Quite on purpose, whenever someone asks him to do something, he looks on that task as an invitation to enhance or trigger his creativity. So he prioritizes taking a creative approach rather than simply doing the job. That way, everything he does makes that moment exciting or interesting or leaves him feeling engaged, more alive, more happy. So these are examples, several examples of approaches that tickle our imagination and invite us into the spirit of how we can view life's circumstances and possibilities. So let's approach the question from even another angle. Let's look at what's out there waiting to be noticed from the perspective of how life can speak to you and me, invite us into its magic, or bring us into its creations. As we know, life is forever showing us her, or if you will, his or its creative and wondrous styles. Styles for living, for loving, for succeeding, for enjoying, for being. And I've thought of three examples of this to share with us. Yep, I'm just filled with examples here. So as one example, when you look out at what's there, what's out there, you could, if you were primed to see it, you could see love. Even if someone was yelling at you, or a baby was crying on your airplane flight, or your boss just fired you, or your favorite niece just vilified you, or, well, you get it. If you were oriented to see love, you could, relatively quickly, in each of these examples, see the love behind the act, or the love in the heart of the person, or at least the attempt at loving that was happening, even though the person may not be very skilled at showing love. As another example, if you were naturally oriented to see wonder, imagine what you would notice whenever you saw, well, anything. If, for example, you viewed a beautiful sunset, or a devastating earthquake, or a miraculous cure, or a painful death, in each and every one of these, you would be filled with a sense of awe. You'd witness in each of them the magic of life at work, and you'd be filled with a sense of wonder at how life expresses and creates. As a third example, if your natural style was one that fostered and oriented you toward inner peace, you'd typically find the soul of every person and every event in your life. That's right, you'd go directly to the center of the storm or directly to the heart of the matter, and you'd find the deepest, most spiritual meaning of any event. You'd uncover each person's underlying beauty, no matter what his or her external behavior. So here's the point that I'm inferring. Of course, it's that we see what we're oriented to see. We perceive not usually some objective event or meaning or truth or person out there. No, rather, we notice exactly the facet or facets that our own inner dynamics precondition us to observe. Now, this fact brings home to us the truth that among the millions, or at least thousands, of possible perceptions and interpretations we can have, most of us isolate our viewing to a very few, and often to a singular one, regardless of whether it's the most accurate or even the most helpful one or not. Wow, perception. Perception is really a tricky business, and by perception I mean noticing, observing, seeing, hearing, perceiving, interpreting. If we study perception in more and more detail, we begin to recognize that everyone's perception is different and unique and individually molded. In fact, many people wonder that we can agree on anything at all. So it all leads me to raise what I believe is the singularly impressive question that I think is, thus far at least, the most important one in this discussion. Are you ready for it? I mentioned I was really in a questioning mode today. Here it is. What's your natural style of perceiving? Now, in asking you this question, I want to emphasize again that what we're all seeing and noticing is not necessarily the full spectrum of what's out there, but what we're primed, and I want to say, designed to see. Now, my strong sense of this phenomenon is this. Each one of us, you and I, each one of us is created to perceive what's around us and relate to life in a certain way. For example, some of us have a created nature that orients us to perceive love everywhere, while others of us are more oriented towards seeing, let's say, creativity in every event. To come up at it from a similar tack, some of us are created to celebrate life in every moment, while others are put together to conquer challenges. Some of us are molded by a divine design to create opportunities, while others are here to more overcome personal obstacles. Some of us are put together to be naturally happy, while others are called in their nature to a process of pursuing happiness. That is, we see and experience what our soul's blueprint moves us to, and what our personal and individualized design primes us to, and what, of course, our decisions and choices that we personally make move us toward. So I ask you the question once again, what is your natural, created, God-given style of perceiving, of viewing, of noticing, of relating to life? Could it be that there's indeed no external reality, and that all there is, quote, out there, unquote, is what each of us individually and collectively perceive? Now, if that's true, and of course modern physics as well as ancient spiritual traditions tend to agree that it is, then it leads us to a startling conclusion. Well, not too startling to any of you because you're way ahead of me, but quite startling to most people. Here it is. We're not here to deal primarily with the world out there that others have created, but we're here to perceive and relate to the world that each of us is divinely created to see and know. I think this is hugely, hugely important, and with your permission, I'd love to repeat that. We're not here to deal primarily with a world out there that others have created, but we're here to perceive and relate to the world that each of us is divinely created to see and know. Therefore, your primary responsibility in life, as the ancient Greek philosophers have told us, is to, quote, know thyself. That is, to know your created nature, to discover how God put you together, to become clear about how you're designed and what you're here to notice, to use your creative intellect and your intuitive sense to make decisions about what you'll see and how you'll see it in accord with your own perfect nature. Now, since in truth there's no external right or wrong way to see what life offers you, you're free. Free to see it, free to call it, according to your own divinely installed style, nature, program, and orientation. Indeed, you're not only free to take this individually inspired approach, you're actually designed to do so. It's the only approach that can work. So, back to the question, what is your natural, created, God-given style of perceiving, viewing, noticing, and relating to life? Let's spend our final moments together in this talk responding to this compelling question. Even more important, let's let our inspired response to the question move us to prioritize our natural style of seeing, prioritize our unique approach to living, our divinely given way of perceiving. So while you're letting your own answer to the question gently rise to the surface and find a place in your mind, I'd like to once again share a couple of examples from my own life. First, as many of you know, one of the styles of my created nature is to see the sacred in everything. And at various points in my life, I've decided to give myself more and more permission to do exactly that, to see the sacred, to see the divine, to see the preciousness of every aspect of life, rather than try to fit my perceptions or expressions around what others were verbalizing or perceiving. The more I did that, the more it felt, well, authentic and natural and genuine, and in fact, it truly reflected what I saw. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that in this world of, oh, what you give out does definitely come back to you, which is one of those terrible truths of life, giving myself this permission to see the sacred in everything has had its embarrassing moments. Like, for example, when certain mentoring groups create a Sunday night skit imitating my sacred-filled approach. It's just humiliating. Or, as happened on our Sacred Sites of Italy tour this last week, after I closed one of our evening meetings using the word sacred many times in reference to many things, that ridiculous Donna spent the next 15 minutes in the privacy of our hotel room playfully referring to every aspect of my person as sacred. Oh, you get the idea. It was terrible. So anyway, let me go on to another example rather than beating that one to death. I noticed over the years that it was very natural for me to see the beauty in other people, and in fact, in every aspect of life. It looked to me like God simply put me together to celebrate people's inner beauty. And of course, in my psychological years as a psychologist, I certainly went through the dualistic value judgment-based diagnoses and clinical distinctions that that approach used. But even in the middle of that labeling approach, I never ever lost sight of the beauty and the specialness of whomever I was dealing with. So over time, I decided to give myself more and more permission to be upfront with this beauty orientation, more and more telling people, to whatever degree they were capable of hearing it, of course, about their specialness, their beauty. So I use those examples again as background music while you were playing again with the question, what is your natural, created, God-given style of perceiving, viewing, noticing life? Whatever your answer, or whatever your intuitive sense about the answer, as you're watching that answer play out in your awareness, how do you feel about it, about this truth about yourself? Is it comfortable, uncomfortable? Does it feel right to you? How much of it captures the essence of who you really are? Also, taking it a little step here, what kind of personal decision about that orientation seems to be emerging in relation to this you? For example, do you feel like prioritizing your natural way of noticing and perceiving in your daily life? Does this way of seeing life seem to call you more fully, or invite you more thoroughly, or even compel you more completely? How, if at all, are you considering letting your naturally created self express in your daily affairs? For example, when you crawl out of bed in the morning, what will you cause yourself to see? Or when you enter into the daily events of your life, how much permission will you give yourself to relate to those events in your own way? And as you go to bed at night and review your day, how will you view the events of that day? Perhaps the most important question, yep, we're moving to another question, and I think this is my last one, is this: how much are you willing to be the self that God, in some dramatic act of amazing divine wisdom and knowing, made you to be? And what I mean is, how much are you really, really willing to be that self? And I'm implying, of course, that the best place to start being this amazing self is by owning your natural way of seeing, perceiving, and noticing. So it's not so much what's in your wallet, but what's in your perception. I really thank you enormously for spending this precious, precious time with me. Whoops, there I did it again, didn't I? Automatically, I noticed our time together as precious. And, you know, what the heck, while I'm on the subject, I might as well add that I'm especially appreciative of you, beautiful, sacred, and perfect person that you are, joining me for this time together. To me, you are absolutely beautiful. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Wrong, for example, that might necessitate your approaching life from any perspective other than the utterly perfect one you were created to have. I love you, and Donna loves you, and I ask only that you love you in all the ways that you deserve, based on all the ways that you are perfectly designed and created and put together and expressed. And in closing, I thank you once again, and I would like to offer you, in closing, the following blessing that I've put together for this moment. May your God-given perceptions of life always enhance you. May your innate ways of viewing your circumstances fill you. May your natural style of noticing what's around you and within you complete you. May your inherent manner of seeing yourself and the world empower you. May your genuine, authentic way of being you offer you the very gifts that life indeed wants to give you. May God bless you fully and perfectly through your inherently created, beautiful nature. May the divine perception become your perception in exactly the ways God intended for you. May the utter beauty of life be fully seen by you in just the way that is your destiny. May your perfection be reflected back to you in everything you see and experience. And may your owning of your divine nature move others to see and claim their perfection. Thank you so very, very much for an absolutely beautiful time together.